The idea behind this whole discussion was informed by the nature of this weekend and the nature of the Social Centre project as well, in that there are lots of groups around Sheffield who, I think it's fair to say, have shared values, shared aims, and a shared perspective on what's wrong in society and what could be really good instead. And that idea of kind of common ground is something that could really be nurtured and sort of nurtured by a social centre and allow people to exchange approaches and ideas and that sort of thing. So we had this idea of just asking, well, how can we bring about the radical social change that we want to see? And, well, first of all, there's like the very question of, well, what is radical social change really? Because, you know, to a fascist, radical social change could mean something completely different to what we're actually meaning, but there's obviously a lot of it which is implicit. So we thought we'd start off by breaking down into small groups of five or so, not too large, and spending just about 5 minutes trying to come up with some sort of loose-ish definition of what we see as kind of radical social change, positive social change, whatever label you want to put to it. So we'll do that, if everyone's cool with that, and come back and then have a brief bit of 30-second feedback from each group and then transition on to the next section of the discussion. So if you want to cluster together in sort of the closest four or five people to you, and consider mixing yourselves up a bit if you're around people that you know really well, or not if you don't want to. All right, cool. That seemed like a pretty engrossing set of discussions. So perhaps if we could have some brief, like, i.e. 30-second feedbacks from people, so 2 to 3 sentences maybe. If we just go around and people share what they've been talking about, that'd be great.
This is our kind of where we're going, what we'd like. Equality, harmony with the earth, more cooperation, more community, less individualistic, less hierarchy or non-hierarchical, and not capitalist. Have I forgotten anything?
Yeah.
All right. Raise that if you can. Next
week. Our group were talking about quite a lot of different sort of examples and wishes for social radical social change, but two main themes that came out were sort of involving everyone from sort of the individual person making choices all the way up to sort of global groups and things like that. And also another big theme was opening up channels of information and communication so people can make informed choices that were right for them, and radical change coming from that.
Basically for social inclusion, for people not to be so isolated and for there to be a stronger sense of community, for that not to be based on competition, and for there to be better, for people to feel better represented either by having it broken down into smaller groups and or easier to get rid of representatives who really said what we thought.
We sort of got hung up on like what actually is radical social change and for people to flesh out what that really was about. And for some members of the group, that was perhaps about the just the incremental changes you could bring about by considering the things that you bought and the effects that they had on the environment and other issues. And for others of us in the group, it was about more fundamental changes, about issues like equality and issues like the environment as well. But I think we lost the time on debating about what that was and how we should achieve it and all the rest of it. But I think some of the things we all perhaps agreed on were issues about equality and the environment were as broad things.
We were talking about the root of society being perhaps the stories that we're told and that we tell one another and that we tell ourselves about what society is. And a decent way of behaving Yeah.
We thought that radical social change should lead to a cooperative, non-hierarchical society in which everybody challenges patriarchy, heteronormativity, and national division. It would also require self-criticism and a challenging of the psychology of leadership. And the change should be local and sustainable from the bottom up. It would include community support, solidarity, a critique of capitalism, and fighting imperialism.
Yeah, we were talking about kind of communities quite a lot, like where you can have kind of fair society, and where talking a bit about like how they exist now in groups of friends, or even like in a place like this, and then about kind of wider society, whether that kind of non-hierarchical society exists, it's kind of how much it exists in the wider world, and then saying how, like, how can we, we're just touching on like how can we take on like more global issues when we're obviously quite kind of far away from them in a way.
Yeah, and can I just add to that and say, well, you know, all the ideas, I guess, are similar, but we also think of something on a practical level, like, you know, be creative, I suppose. Don't rely on a sweatshop worker in China to give you your clothes, and don't rely on your food to be shipped in from Chile or wherever. You know, do it yourself in a way and pick up those skills.
Well, that's fairly broad, broad range of things, but also lots of crossovers, obviously. We're going to move on to the next bit, which might involve, well, eventually will involve just a bit of open discussion. So just to keep, or just to ensure that everyone's voice can be heard, we'd like to try and keep to hands if you've got a point to raise. And we'll do our best to like keep a fair order of talking. And then also, if you want to just express agreement, we're not making any decisions here, obviously, but if you want to just express agreement, then you can obviously nod or just wave your hands is a nice way to do it as well.
Or jump up and down.
Yeah, or anything really. Oh, and there's one other hand signal. What was it?
Yeah, well, if we have direct responses, can kind of jump the queue. A lot of you know that will know this already. But if you put two fingers up, you've got a direct response to what someone said, then you can jump the queue within reason. Otherwise, we might retain the power to veto someone who's perpetually going like that. And of course, yeah, there's a technical.
You want to make it?
Oh, you want to make it? It's beautifully illustrated.
That's a technical point. I was just saying that it's common practice to want not directly respond to a direct response, like, because it tends to like to use it once basically, and then let the conversation continue. So you know. Because otherwise it tends to just get into a debate between two people.
So two are direct response.
Yeah.
One is, if you've got want to say anything.
Yeah, you'll join the queue if loads of people have got the
And that's up. Technical.
Yeah, and that is I need a wee.
What's I need a poo?
I'll let you choose. Okay, so there'll be loads of opportunity, I think, for a big open debate in a bit, and people could feel lots of questions. But for now, we're going to perhaps have an opportunity for a small platform for three people here who are going to, I think, by no means represent in a kind of leadership way a field of theory or a group of people. But they've probably associate themselves with. We've got Heather over here from SCAC, Sheffield Campaign Against Climate Change. We've got Susanna, who does a lot with transition. And we've got Jemima from AFED, the Anarchist Federation. So I think if we do it in that order, perhaps we'll keep it fairly brief, introduce what your group's about and how you tackle social change.
There are other, Heather, but there are other people here from Sheffield Campaign Against Climate Change. So do chip in. And I suppose I'm also speaking my own views as well as what Sheffield Campaign Against Climate Change is about. We started 4 years ago, and it was just after a national campaign against climate change started, and there was a first big demonstration in London. And that was at the time when people were thinking this is an emergency and the politicians aren't recognising that climate change is happening, it's affecting a lot of people, often in southern hemisphere countries, And we know it's about burning fossil fuels, and this is still happening. And we've got to put on pressure on the politicians. And a lot of the focus was on America at the time, and that was Bush, and there were vigils outside the United States Embassy. And so we in Sheffield decided we want to get a campaign going, and a very much a campaign to draw attention to the need to have big political agreements on an international agreement to bring down greenhouse gases, and one that would be effective, because they had to be brought down, as we know, by 80%, and fair, so that Southern Hemisphere countries weren't handicapped by that, and the major reductions would need to be taken by places like the United States and Britain. So that was the start of the campaign, and in Sheffield we got a group together, and part of it was going to London and being part of campaigns, and part of it was getting that news out that, and I'll still say that, it's not enough just to do things from the grassroots. The timescale is such that there can well be runaway climate change with drastic effects for everybody on the planet. So, and at this debate, I'll state this position about we needing a radical social change that's going to take hold of the economy, the banks, the way of life, that's going to radically change our whole society. And things that you might well know, at the moment in Britain, if everybody continues to live like we do, and if everybody in the world lived like we do, we'd need three planets. And the same in America, if everybody lived like America, we'd need six planets. So we're living way beyond our ecological limits. So it does need radical change. Currently, none of our major parties have grasped it, or if they do grasp it, they don't want to do anything about it. And as the years have gone by, I know SCAC, it's much clearer that there's an enormous economic issue here. We can't have economic growth and do something about climate change. So it's become quite... We have to work towards a steady state economy, planned degrowth, that also works for equality. And I think that's beginning to be understood, that a campaign for a fair society, reducing inequalities, is hand in hand with a battle against climate change and a battle for sustainability. So the battle for against runaway climate change is a battle for a major radical social change that needs to happen at all levels. But the urgency for climate change is getting a handle on the levers at the top as well as grassroots at the bottom. The kind of activities have been very big demonstrations, been a lot of lobbying, again, of politicians, support for direct action, and this climate camp, which isn't part of the campaign against climate change, but lots of people in the campaign are part of climate camp this summer against the Royal Bank of Scotland with their investments in tar sands, so it has international reach. Links in Copenhagen, several of us were in Copenhagen, part of the alternative movements, linking with people from the global south. So finding other ways, you know, other models of how we can work for sustainability, so having international links. So those are some of the things. And then, and what we're doing in Sheffield, one of the things around this economics issue, is a series of lectures this autumn at the cathedral. And it is the economy servant or tyrant? So some really fantastic speakers and debate around that issue. Okay, and Jenny here runs a fantastic newsletter, e-newsletter called Live the Cool Life. Is it still called Live the Cool Life? Yeah. Still Live the Cool Life. So, which coordinates a lot of events around sustainability and climate change. So if anybody wants to be on it, see Jenny.
So transition movement, very much linked to what Heather was talking about, began out of our realisation that our current ways of life are really unsustainable. And that was partly about the awareness of climate change, also about the awareness of peak oil. This is the realisation that most of this last 100 years of society and what we thought of as progress was really founded on fossil fuels, and fossil fuels we're using up at an extraordinarily fast rate, that the energy supplies for this civilization were laid down over millions of years, and we're using them up kind of in the flash of a star, you know, just extraordinarily quickly. And so we need to have some plans. We need to start thinking about how we're going to change the ways in which our society is constructed, because it's not just about energy as well. If you look around any room, we can see the clothes that we're wearing. We can see that the food that we're eating, by and large, was produced with lots of fertilizers from oil, with pesticides, and that even the agriculture is relying on tractors that are taking oil to plough the fields, that the transport that brings us the food from overseas, all of that has been massively using fossil fuels. So, and the other awareness of what that does to our climate has already been really well illustrated. And I think as well, for me, it's an awareness that it could have been any issue, really. It's just that our society hasn't been thinking about sustainability. Climate change and peak oil have been the first things that have come to light. And it was Rob Hopkins who kind of had a bit of a light bulb moment about this as he was teaching on a course with environmental students. And together they came to a realisation that we needed to start to plan for change. And it was over in Kinsale in Ireland, in a village, that he and his students put together a plan, an energy descent plan for that village. And they started to ask some powerful questions. And the questions are, what is it that we really need for a society, for a community to thrive, for individuals to thrive within a community? Is it necessarily about this massive consumption process? Is it about other things that make human life really valuable? So the way that the movement has come together is around groups of people getting together to think about their communities, where they are situated, and how they can build viable communities for the future that are going to be quite different in how they work. And so people may form little groups to look at food security. They may look at energy security. And quite importantly, they also look at emotional security. So there are groups, say, a hearts and mind groups, thinking about, well, what is it that we need for emotional security? What is it that makes life important that way? Here in Sheffield, there have been groups getting together. Perhaps the most ambitious project is going on in the Moss Valley, where they are buying some land, 9 acres of land, to be a community project. It's a community-supported agriculture project. It's a cooperative. They're looking for investment. So this is a way of pooling the resources of the community, because you've got people who do have perhaps money to invest are investing into a community project where the beneficiaries will be people in the surrounding area who can receive a veg box. I mean, okay, there's payment involved there as well. But the sense of people giving what they can give to make things happen, and people receiving from that things to make the community viable. And very much a grassroots movement. People getting together to say, well, what can we do now? What is it that we have the resources to do? What do we have the inspiration to do? And how can we make this change happen? There are communities who are working very much with their local councils. So Chesterfield, Kirklees are examples where there's been some big initiatives taken by the council that have been inspired out of the transition movement or people working on the council. who are very much involved in their local transition groups to make things happen. And I think one of the things is that the movement started in a village, and the village model isn't very easy to adopt into a city. But actually in a city, there is loads going on already. There are loads of groups. There are these groups. People coming together to make things happen in all sorts of ways. And how that translates into radical social change, I guess it's up to us.
Hey, thanks, Susanna. That just leaves out the three. Jemima, he's going to chat a little bit about the anarchist revolution. What are you getting to on that?
Like we said before, I'm not delegated to speak on behalf of the local anarchist federation group. We do have some aims and principles. Can everyone hear me all right? Okay, good. We do have some aims and principles that we all agree to when we joined, so I'm more speaking about my understanding and interpretation of those aims and principles. Before I start, I just thought there's something to throw in for the debate afterwards. One of the things that didn't come up when people were talking about radical change, which personally I feel is quite an essential part of building a free and equal society, is a critique of religion and atheism. And I just thought it was interesting that I was largely absent from people's discussions. I thought it was important, actually, that Ollie stated at the beginning that something like fascists interpret what they do as radical. I think that's absolutely true. And I think we kind of have to question the basis by which we accept this word radical, because radical basically means, you know, anything different, drastically different from the status quo. Whereas as an organisation, as an anarchist communist organisation, we have a very clear understanding of not only our criticisms of the existing order, but the type of world that we'd like to see created. And I think the fascism example is important because capitalism, which is the cause of most of the things that people have identified meaning that we need radical change. Capitalism is very effective at co-opting and adapting to radical challenges to it. And I guess we would question or critique the idea that you could build a space inside of a capitalist system that embodies the type of values that we want to create. And just an example to try and illustrate that, many cooperative businesses rely on workers having to work harder, having to work longer hours, having to take lower pay than if they were, for example, living and working in a large firm. So the result is, because the rules of the game are profit, you end up exploiting yourself more than if you were working in a big business. And that's not me saying everyone should go work in a big business. I'm pointing out that it's the rules of the game that makes us do that, and we need to change the rules of the game. We have an understanding of society which is based on people's interests. And the way that we see it, there is a capitalist class who take most of the profit, who live off the profit of the other section of society, the vast majority of society, which is the working class. And lots of people don't see themselves as working class. The government has been incredibly successful at convincing many people that they are not working class. We're not talking about sociological definitions here. You know, whether you like football or you go drinking down the pub and have real ale, what I'm talking about is if you need to work in order to survive. That means you're working class, and that is the condition of the vast majority of people. When we work as working class people, our labour is stolen from us. It's taken away and it's turned into profit. And it's this process, which is called alienation, which causes the breakdown of human community. It causes inequality, it causes deprivation, it causes poverty, and in cases of drastic exploitation, like in the developing world, it causes famine, death, war. And of course, on a global scale, we have the the spectre of climate change, which again is a result of capitalist development and an unsustainable way of interacting with the world, one based on profit. The way that we see the best way of challenging this system is to take direct action, to encourage self-management, building autonomous communities. Like, I see the Social Centre project here as an autonomous community, a way of creating communities in opposition to the way that capitalism has socialised us to behave. And ultimately, I think we accept that revolutionary change is necessary for any radical change, that the capitalist class will defend its privileges and its interests with force. It has done in the past and it will do in the future. And that mass revolutionary action is necessary to abolish work, challenge capitalism, and get rid of the state. Ultimately, what we're working towards is a communist society. And normally when I say that word, the big C word, everyone freaks out. Because it's communism is normally associated with the horrific events in Soviet Russia, in Cambodia, in China, and many other places around the world. That has nothing to do with what communism is. Communism was originally our word. It was owned by the labour movement, by the anarchist movement, and then the Marxists took it off us and tried to tell us that the state owning everything was communism. Now, that's not true. Free communism is exactly the kind of relationships that you see embodied here, of voluntary association, work without profit, the working to people's capacities and ultimately trying to provide for everyone's needs. And it's that kind of human community that we'd ultimately like to create. And I haven't said a huge amount of what we do. We do a lot of things, I'm sure you can check out our website and see what we do, but I thought it was important to get our perspective over rather than our activity.
Okay, thanks. I guess there was a lot of common ground there, both in the first initial session where we all broke up and spoke about what we thought social change was, and then in each of the pictures that those three drew of sort of current society, really, and the world in which we live. So I thought a good question that we could start off this discussion with, as we look to tackle exactly that situation, is what can we justifiably use? What tools are there available to us in order to bring about radical social change? And I'd ask that really openly to the floor. I mean, those three people are certainly allowed to come in. Everyone can put in what they think about along that issue. Now, I know there's a lot of people here, so you have to speak up loud. But, yeah.
First of all, not your own life, isn't it? That your own life reflects what you're trying to change in others. Is that I think I'm quite good at being a hypocrite, so I can moan about something, bang a gong, and yet I'm not living it. And yet I think we're most influenced when we see somebody else walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
I think knowledge is one of our great tools, and to inform ourselves, I've noticed that expertise was what was missing from a lot of the green issues. People actually able to go out there and create the reports and do the engineering to put wind turbines up, and all the other examples. Knowledge is a real helper to your community to be able to bring them forward into realms that they hadn't previously been able to step into. I think knowledge is a great help.
Knowledge and everybody here's got different brains with different thoughts and different experiences, and the fact that we can use them all because we're not in a hierarchical structure. The fact that we can all come together, really, I guess, and use each other's experiences and brains.
Voices not in the limited sense of speaking to people, but also in being out on demonstrations, in writing in the media, and all different ways of influencing others, particularly people who are making decisions on our behalf, being out there and challenging things.
I think just being welcoming to people and saying, yeah, whatever skill you have got or whatever your interest is, that can be something that's helpful for people on the whole, because a lot of the time maybe people don't feel they've got something to contribute, but once you start talking to them, they're like, oh yeah, I know about that, or yeah, I could pitch in and help with that. So people just need to know that whatever their skills are, they are valued and they are welcome.
I'm going to put something in and say that, well, maybe just to throw another element into this, there's what we can justifiably use, what we feel we can justifiably use to further the positive elements, if that's the right way to put it, of our visions of radical social change, but then there's the forces that we can justifiably use to resist the negative sides of the society that we're trying to change. And just to like start off that ball rolling as well, I reckon that it's justifiable to non-violently, that's introducing another word with like pretty precarious definitions, but non-violently put yourself in the way of things which are protected by laws of the state. By laws of the state. Sorry, I've lost my theory a bit. Laws of the state which kind of protect our kind of capitalist society. Sorry, I lost my thread a bit there, but I think you got the picture. So if anyone else wants to kind of introduce any things that we can justify be used to resist things, and maybe that would mix it up a little bit.
I think we have the right to disobey. Where there is a conflict between the doing what is legal and doing what is just, what is right, I think you should always choose to do what is right or what you think is right. I think the law is entirely irrelevant to our decisions.
One of the good tools is chaos, because one of the points that was brought out was about alienation. Alienation is a very ordered situation where people are ordered into a situation. I think chaos is sometimes can change things, give people an experience that makes them ask questions, and then from there they can probably work it out themselves.
I think the law is entirely irrelevant, because until you've got a big enough base of people who understand and are involved in this, you can't make change. I think this is the thing we were saying before. I think that a lot of people don't even know there's an alternative. They wouldn't feel, they connect, they wouldn't even know about groups like this. And so they're just sitting sort of, and I know it's getting harder, there's more like social problems now and more economic problems, but people don't really know there's an alternative. They carry on bobbing along. And I think until you've got enough people who can make change, because otherwise if you it is really good. I think it's good. I've never been to a protest, so I honestly can't say, but I think that is a good way of getting things to people's attention. But at the same time, it can serve to alienate people if they don't know really what it's about. If they don't completely understand your view, then it could just they just see it as like, oh, look, they're just protesting again. I know this is very not what everyone else thinks, but I do think you have to kind of try and branch out and reach as many parts of society so that when you protest, they know completely what it's about and that it's not just... I don't know, I've started talking and I don't really know how to finish it, to be honest, but I do think that the law, if you can follow it cleverly and still get your point across, it's even better, because the people who wouldn't have listened to you think, actually, they've got a really good point, and they're not just going full pelted it, they have something there.
I think we've got to be flexible in the tactics, and perhaps different situations demand different tactics. And we don't, I wouldn't sort of propose that we always flout the law, always risk imprisonment, prosecution, fining, whatever. I mean, it can be, you can ruin an organisation, ruin a campaign just to recklessly, take risks. But at the same time, I always would believe in the idea that better to break the law than break the poor. And I don't care what anti-trade union piece of legislation exists, or what limitations have been put on us in particular actions, that at the end of the day, we've got to sort of stand up for ourselves, or we're going to be crushed. I mean, it's becoming harder and harder and harder to take any sort of action, be it we've seen over the last year various strikes scuppered at BA and on the whims of the capitalist state. So I've no faith in capitalist law. It's there to protect the people that own the majority of wealth in society, who own the factories, who own the land, who basically are the state, effectively. And I think we're kidding ourselves if to have such blind faith in the vagaries of the law and to believe that it can serve us. So I think we should be flexible in our tactics, we should be clever, we should not be reckless, but we should still be prepared to break the law when it's required to protect ourselves and to further the interests of ordinary people.
I just want to mention what's already been said in previous meetings about solidarity and developing things like social spaces. Capacity building is people's skills, that's already been mentioned, but also using the hated term money. I've thought for quite a number of years about Sheffield developing its own social fund financially with a responsible group dealing with that. I know there are organisations already exist like Radical Roots and credit unions, but I'm talking about a dedicated Sheffield social fund for supporting social centres and cooperatives in particular, without social exclusion. Talk about full social inclusion, but some kind of responsible organisation that where people want to contribute, if they want to contribute, they can. I don't think Sheffield particularly has that at the moment, and it might be a benefit. It doesn't have to be cash. It could also be alternative currencies or people's time, a time bank and tools bank, etc. But I don't think personally there's anything particularly central that supports at the present, I may be wrong about that, but a Sheffield Social Fund or something along those lines, if people want to contribute financially, may help.
Well, I do agree with all of you about breaking the law and everything. I also want to introduce the idea of, well, there is loads of empty buildings in Sheffield, and I have seen leases have been given to groups of people organising community stuff. So I think that could be maybe a possibility to be explored, to work within the law, to have a stable building with the lease of the council. And that way, maybe you also will attract a wider variety of people, because I have seen in other countries that groups like ours sometimes tend to isolate themselves just by being illegal. And that's a point that we have to consider as well.
There's a point there, if you wanted it before. There's a hand up before.
I think by the law is irrelevant, I meant kind of, it should be irrelevant when you're making a choice about whether to do something or not. I think what the, I think it was Greenpeace campaigners that got off damaging the King's North power station on the defence of necessity, given that climate change is the greater evil. That was grand, that's great. But at the same time, if you've got a choice to make and the right choice is illegal, that shouldn't, in my opinion, be a factor in your decision making. Practically it should, but not in principle.
Yeah, I'd like to add creativity to the pot as one of the tools we can use for radical social change. Because I think what we said earlier was that a society is about the stories we tell ourselves, or they tell us, and that they, you know, we're expected to believe and listen to and think that that's really what's going on. So I think if we can get those subversive messages across of actually we don't actually agree with the main messages that are coming across to us, then that's a very powerful thing to do. So it's actually questioning the main stories that are going on in society, and creativity is a good way to do that, to actually bring art and theatre and music into that, and actually sort of have ways of getting engaging people that aren't just about, you know, this or this, but are kind of like much more subtle, much more free ranging, really.
I think you have to be. I'm going to take off this hat. I think you have to be incredibly careful when you're dealing with the architecture of capital and the state. And I agree, that's not to say that I think you need to always be in conflict with them. The Social Centre Collective made a decision to pursue a legal space, and that was a result of the fact that a squatted space, which incidentally isn't illegal, but does cause friction with the local establishment, was a bar to building the project. So, you know, it was necessary to be flexible on certain things, because not having that flexibility meant absolutely no connection to the local community. I think you have to accept that revolutionaries, people who have radical ideas, will always be a minority. A minority interacting with the rest of society. And it's periods of quite radical upheaval that then brings people to us. And attempting to kind of make your ideas as popular as possible, which some people do, generally leads to the actual values being watered down and watered down and watered down until you have nothing left. And, you know, I can see a lot of steps, for example, where you have a social centre that maybe gets a grant, which then becomes a community project, which then becomes an art space, which then has absolutely nothing to do with radical politics anymore. It's not a big space between those two things. So I think it's important always to keep sight of your values when we're talking about radical change and acknowledging that the state and capitalism creates a certain psychology within people, and if we're not challenging that psychology of leaders and led, then we're failing, essentially.
Going back to what we want to bring, what can we bring to us? I think we need to bring to us the power of, I don't like the word, but the power of nature, because it's by historically we were made wage slaves by separating ourselves from that power, by separating ourselves from the land, and it's only by reconnecting with the land in a not in a necessarily just a psychological way, but in an economic way, that we'll stop being slaves. If we have access to the means of production, then we're free. If you have to work for somebody to get food and shelter and the other necessities of life, then you're a slave.
Yeah, following on from that, very much agree with that. Power of being coupled or joined or in balance with nature is what we're trying to bring the knowledge of to people, as well as being in balance with each other, rather than, what do they call it, the natural C word. Well, there's natural socialism that we live with every day that tends not to get mentioned. But to follow on from that, and going back to the knowledge thing I mentioned earlier, people will often look in times of trouble, like Eman's just said, for people that have got knowledge. Oh, wind turbines, they don't work. They can only get 30% off them because, then you put storage on the grid. And all the other things that people bring up just so easily so they can stay with a comfortable, easy, capitalist existence, the devil they know. If we've got the answers to tell them that GM crops don't work, and these are the reasons why, in simple and easily enough understood terms for people to gain that knowledge for themselves, it infects your stomach's fauna and flora. I can explain that tomorrow. Workshop. Quick plug. And that kind of knowledge is what people would be glad to hear from people, and that's what they expect us to have as people that have organised to give an alternative message. They expect us to know things. And that's what we can give them. We can give them knowledge. Knowledge is also power. Strange word, power. But, yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to maybe sort of start to round this off. There's a lot of food for thought, but there's some food for our bellies coming sometime relatively soon, and perhaps we'd like to have a little bit of a chill out before then. But before I do, I'd maybe like to venture that in terms of what we've got available to us in the city here, in order to achieve some of these things that we're thinking about at the moment, and in order to combat some of these seemingly almost insurmountable problems that a lot of people are posing, a lot of critiques that they've got of the world around us, that perhaps a venue such as a social centre, which is run collectively by anyone who wants to get involved on a completely non-hierarchical basis, that is precisely the engine room for the kind of change that we want to see achieved here. So this is a round off with a bit of a plug for what we're doing, you know, because this is what you're doing as well. Even if some of you might have thought you've just come along to check out what's going on, this is just as much yours as it is anyone else who's been involved in the planning or anything else, or running a workshop. Okay, this is everyone's. We had it written up on a board who's in charge here earlier. Was every single one of you. Okay, and we'd like to see this as a growing movement, as something that's going to carry on. This is just a momentary thing. This is just a weekend, running a few workshops, a bit of yoga, some films and a chat. But it will carry on, and this is going to be a growing thing. So unless anyone else would like to add anything else,
to this discussion. How do we bring about radical social change? Maybe we'll go and have a cup of tea. No, cool.